Rise and shine! It's a great day in the North Woods!
Hello to all you Hoot Camp family who are out there listening. Thanks for clicking that play button on today's episode. I'm John Bergman, and I'll be your host for this one. And we've got another conversation for you here with another camp alum. In today's episode, I chat with Dale Reckman. Dale attended camp for 2 years as a young teenager, right smack dab in the mid-1970s. You'll notice that the topic of learning and learning by experience comes up a lot in this conversation, and I think that that's such a good concept to keep in mind always whenever reflecting on the positive past experiences at camp and whenever thinking about ways to educate the current generation of camper. I'll leave it there because I think Dale expounds on it a lot better during our talk. But whether you're sitting at home or sitting at work or driving somewhere, I hope you enjoy this one with Dale. I certainly had a blast talking with him, getting to know him. So here it is, a conversation with Dale Reckman. Dale, thank you so much for slipping into our digital studio here, our podcasting campsite, as it were. I know it's going to be a good conversation anytime the initial emails that precede the recording entail some mention of camp donuts. And that's something that you brought up when you and I were emailing back and forth before this show. And so I wish I had some right now that we could snack on as we talk, But let's start there. Tell me what you remember about Camp Donuts in all of their sugary greatness.
Well, you know, it's John, you know, it's funny. I don't know that I was probably the stereotypical camper that would attend Camp Voyager. You know, as I remember, you know, most of the kids who were there were really focused on sports, and, you know, soccer was a huge thing in the soccer fields there. And you know, and I kind of ended up at Camp Voyager because I loved the outdoors. I loved that exploration out in the park and the canoeing and the camping and in the gear. Albeit the gear in those days was significantly different than the high tech stuff that we have now. But you know, I really enjoyed the outdoor piece of it. This past summer, I was up and I had just finished a trip in the park with my youngest daughter, whom has been a trusted paddler friend of mine through herself growing up. And, you know, and oftentimes I tell her about the stories, and we wandered around camp when we were there. And you know, one of my fondest memories is, you know, you would wake up, and as I remember it, and hopefully I'm not incorrect in this, but as I would remember it, it would typically be either like on a, I'm going to say it was probably a Sunday morning. In every week, Sunday morning, you would wake up in your cabin and you would smell these homemade sugar donuts, and the smell would kind of be wafting across that entire peninsula, and you would hear the bell ringing, you know, and it was time to congregate in the mess hall for donuts. And you would get down there and they would bring out just these big, huge plastic bowls, you know, and these bowls would just be heaped full of these homemade sugar donuts. And there would be these people back in the kitchen cooking, and they would just be bringing out bowl after bowl after bowl of these donuts, you know, while all of us ravenous kids were just emptying these bowls. And, you know, it seems like something really simple now. But it was really a lasting memory that I've never quite forgot. You think of camp, and oftentimes I have heard people talk about camp food, and you know, it's kind of, you know, enough to get you by, and but you kind of miss home. And I think that was always one of the really unique things of camp for myself. The food was always just fantastic. You know, every meal you would go, it was like a big special occasion. And you would talk about the trip stories, or you would talk about the fish that you almost had, or the fish that you saw swimming somewhere. And you know, those sugar donuts have oftentimes sparked to conversations that you just can't imagine quite what it was like unless you were there. But a pretty unique experience. And I've since come to understand that, I guess nowadays, because of people passing and moving on, that maybe now that's just a once per camp type of a thing. But we were blessed in that we had it as a weekly occurrence, as always something for all of us to look forward to.
I'm imagining all the alumni that are listening to this. I'm sure they're salivating at the thought. Everybody's craving donuts right now if they're hearing.
Yeah,
this.
You know, you would smell these donuts, and all of us, you know, all of us young bucks, we would get out of our cabins and we would start sprinting down that long pathway down to the mess hall. And it's funny, I have a story on that. I think it was my first year at camp, and you know, some days would be rainy and some days would be wet, and we would be sprinting, you know, down that pathway and all the exposed roots. And I remember I was pretty early on, I think, in my first camp year, and I'm sprinting down that path, and I end up catching one of those roots that are on that path right about in the proximity of where the nurse's little hut was at. And went face first down onto a root, and of course ripped my knee open, you know, and there was, you know, a little bit of drama, and I had a bunch of, you know, blood running down my knee, and everybody's like, "Oh, we got to go to the nurse's station." I'm like, "Well, we need to hold back because there's not going to be any donuts left. We need to go. We need to take care of the business at hand. Get our handful of donuts, and then we'll make our way into the nurse's station."
I was gonna say, if you scrape your knee, there, I guess there's no place better to do it than right in front of the nurse's cabin. But you, you sacrifice. Just keep moving on. Continue on to the donuts.
There's priorities at hand here.
Well, and the donuts are. You're correct. They are. Absolutely still a staple of the summer. It's not every Sunday. It's usually the Sunday when campers are either leaving at the end of the session, and then some campers arrive later that day for the next session. But still a huge thing, still a camp tradition, probably still using some of the same plastic bowls to serve them in. And it's something that continues to be a great memory for campers that go to camp nowadays. Did you ever wake up at 3 o'clock a.m. or 3:30, 4 o'clock a.m. to go down to the mess hall and help make the donuts?
No, I did not. No, okay. I did not. And quite frankly, I don't necessarily remember in my days, I don't know that I remember that as being a thing. You know, obviously we would all participate in helping to clean up. You know, you may remember back, you know, we had those funny kind of plastic spatulas, you know, that we would scrape all the bowls out of and everything as the bowls were emptied out. But no, I don't specifically remember actually going in and helping to actually make them.
Let's pan out a little bit, because you talked about being an outdoorsy kid. Let's talk a little bit about that era, the mid-70s, mid-late 1970s, because it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that era was really right when the idea of summer camp was hitting a new apex in American consciousness. It was almost like a new golden era of summer camp in American culture, American pop culture even, because I know for, I don't know, like a decade there, starting right around your time, those couple years when you were at camp, there were movies about summer camps. There were cartoons about summer camps. There were books about summer camps. I actually read in an article in the New York Times that said in the mid 70s, it was estimated that there was 10 million kids going to summer camp every year. I think nowadays, for reference, it's a little more than double that, but still 10 million is a lot of kids. Did it feel like that when you were a kid? Did it feel like the summer camp experience was becoming more of a ubiquitous part of more and more kids' childhood?
You know, John, it did. But I'll tell you, something that stuck out even more was, you know, the ideal of going to a summer camp where it was, in fact, really as long as it was for us. You know, most of the friends, and I grew up in a suburb of Southwest Ohio that actually I was told had quite a few Camp Voyager people going to. It was an area called Indian Hill in Cincinnati. And I always learned that there were quite a few kids from this area actually attending Camp Voyager. For the other kids that I was friends with that weren't attending, for example, Camp Voyager, a really unique thing was always this disbelief that I was actually going to a summer camp. And at that time, it was going to be for basically the entire summer. It was, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, I think camp in those days, it was maybe a six week term. But it was for all intents and purposes, it was all summer long. And I remember a lot of dialogue surrounding, you know, well, didn't you get homesick? How did you feel about literally spending your entire summer up in this, you know, seemingly unknown area of Northeast Minnesota where there's lots of bugs and lots of water? And I remember actually the first year that I went to camp, I remember my parents being pretty focused on that of, you know, well, you know, this is what you may need to do if, you know, he's getting homesick or this or that. And it was always kind of unique because once you were there, I think you thought about that maybe a little bit prior to being there, especially prior to being there the very first time. But having then gone, and once you're there, that was genuinely pretty much the farthest blip on the radar. And there was just so much activity and so much camaraderie that took place really quickly. That, you know, it was before you knew it, your parents were showing up to pick you up and to bring you back home. You know, a lot of people, they love the sporting activities, and the sporting activities at Camp Voyager were fantastic. But for me, you know, that ideal day was, you know, if I wasn't on a trip somewhere out in the woods, out in the park, you know, that ideal day is on occasion we would get free time or free days. And it was me grabbing a fishing rod and a box of some of my Rapalas and my Daredevils and just taking off with a friend of mine out, you know, and just wandering the whole peninsula. And, you know, a lot of times we would end up back by, as I remember it, it was back by the archery range. There were some points, some rock points back by the archery range. And we would go back there and fish. And, you know, right or wrong, I don't know that I really understood the park and what ultimately would become my love for the park and my genuine everlasting love for the outdoors in Northeast Minnesota that I would develop there in my camp days. But that's precisely what happened. That kind of came after. But Camp Voyager was, you know, it was that jumping point to really just get that inbred in me, to where then that's really all I wanted to do then after the camp years.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the physical maturation that takes place at camp is often focused on because it's so easy to notice it, right? You get stronger, you can carry heavier stuff, you eventually can carry a canoe. You're valuable to the group in a different way as you grow, as you get stronger. But the mental maturation that you experience at camp, and even beyond camp, to your point, the kind of wisdom and appreciation that continues, you don't realize that that's taking place. That can you talk a little bit maybe about when you think back on how camp helped plant those seeds for an appreciation for the park, for the Boundary Waters canoe area, or the Quetico, or just the area up there, the Superior National Forest. Can you talk more about like specific memories of camp helping to mold that?
Yeah. You know, and I think a lot of what you just said is very accurate. You know, I think there's the natural, you know, graduation through the different levels of I'll call it wilderness canoe tripping. You know, when you first start out, you know, quite frankly, you really don't know anything. And at that point, you're focused on, you know, what goes bump in the night, and you're focused on bear, and you're focused on whatever it may be. And you really don't, because I think you really just don't know much else. But then, you know, as you become more experienced and you start to learn, I'll call it the tricks of the park. You know, what do you do when you have multiple days on end where it's just nonstop rain, and where I think, you know, it would be easy for kids that aren't really in that mode to get pretty bored and to just get, you know, seemingly pretty restless with the process. You know, you get to where, you know, there's more enjoyment, whether it's just sitting on the shoreline and just looking out at the lake and, you know, the wonder. I know, at least for myself, even to this day, you know, one of my favorite things in the park is, you know, getting up, having a nice breakfast. And if it's a layover day, then you head out and you sit on a nice rock that's got just the right contour to it. And you sit out there and you kind of, you know, watch the wind on the water a little bit. And maybe you listen to a loon for a little bit. And, you know, if you're with those people that you care about, you just talk about, you know, the days of the past, and maybe I'll talk about those Camp Voyager days. But, you know, I think you're just your appreciation of the area and the park, it really changes as time goes by. Growing up at camp, you know, there's the natural progression and experience of, you know, in the early days, you're always in the front of a canoe and you're simply there for paddle power. And, you know, as time goes by and as the years go by, then, you know, you migrate to more responsibility on the trips and in more leadership roles. You know, and I think that's also one of those very interesting things about Camp Voyager is it genuinely teaches leadership, you know, at the very foundational level. Whether it's a really tough day, as all of us who have spent much time in the park can recognize how tough some days can be. You get a really hard crosswind, you get a really choppy lake, and it, you know, one of those days where it seems like all the waves are coming at different angles to you. And, you know, maybe you've got an inexperienced front paddler, and all of a sudden you've migrated to the role of you're in the back of the canoe, you're controlling, you're you know, steering, and you're the sternman in the boat. And, you know, maybe you're actually carrying the canoes on the portages, which obviously is a pretty significant piece of responsibility. So there's a natural progression that takes place, and that comes with experience. That quite frankly, you know, I think that serves people well their entire life, as well as there's always that aspect of having to help those that are with you that are maybe less experienced. And quite frankly, on their initial trips, as I'm sure you've seen, can really go through stages where they're really struggling. For someone, when it's their first trip or their second trip, it can, you know, it can be a pretty daunting thing. I can remember it being a pretty scary thing for myself. But you kind of follow the ways of those that have done it before you, and you learn from them, and you learn what you should be concerned about and what is just kind of the normal business fare. And you just kind of go with the program. So just a tremendous amount of learning experiences, I think that camp affords.
Yeah. And something else to that point, when you talk about helping the people that are on the trip where it might be their first time on the trail, you went to camp when you were a young teenager, maybe 13 years old, 14 years old, something like that. I think that's a really unique age to go to camp. I think every age has its benefits, if you attend camp. But to go to camp when you were 13 or 14 years old, you're not the 10-year-old or the 11-year-old, yet you're not the 16-year-old, the 17-year-old. You're right there in the middle. And I've always thought that that's a really special age, 13, 14, to be at camp, because you can become friends with the 10-year-olds and the 11-year-olds, and you can also become friends with the 16 and 17-year-olds. And I think camp provides a really unique opportunity for those friendships with all of those ages to blend in a way that you really can't find in school a lot of times, because heck, if you're a 14-year-old, it's not cool to be friends with an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old usually, right? Or if you're a 13-year-old, probably the 17-year-olds, they might not want to hang out with you in school. So that's one of the great things I think about being that in between age 13 and 14 is you can make friends on both ends of that spectrum.
And you've got this common bond. You know, camp CV, it has this thing where there's always this common denominator in that most of the kids that are there, and I think you always have probably some exceptions, but I know when I was there, you know, you pretty much always had the common denominator that you had kids that for the most part, they really enjoyed and embraced the outdoors. They loved that sense of adventure. Maybe they liked, you know, boating, or, you know, there were a lot of kids that really enjoyed sailing, you know, when I was there, but most of the kids, you know, to some level enjoyed fishing. They enjoyed the outdoors. They enjoyed the wildlife, and they just kind of embraced that whole ideal of exploration in, you know, well, what's down this path? You know, what's down this really dark path that you can't see the other end of? Let's go screw around and walk down there and go explore, and let's go see what we find and what we learn. And I think most of the kids there, for the most part, had that common denominator. So it brought all ages together. And I also think older kids, you know, at least when I went, they really embraced showing the younger kids kind of the way. You know, in those days, we didn't have, you know, the great Gore-Tex rain gear and things like we have today, you know. So in those days, it was learning where you're going to put, for example, your equipment pack when you're in camp, you know, where you're going to put it. You're not going to put it in some slough or some area where it's going to be sitting in a big puddle of water, because in those days, the big Duluth packs, you know, they would wick up water from the bottom, and then all of a sudden all your gear's wet. So it was learning, you know, all of these different things, or securing, you know, a canoe in your paddles so they don't catch wind when you're in camp, and just, you know, how you put on a rain poncho. In those days, we had just regular, you know, non-technical plastic or PVC rain ponchos, and, you know, you either put them on right and you stayed more or less dry, or you didn't, and within a half hour you were wet, soaked to the bone. So there was always this learning, as long as you were open to it. You know, there are things that I still remember today that I learned in the camp days that just kind of stick with you.
Can you share some that come to mind when you think of things I learned at camp? You gave that great example of just appreciating the contours of a rock, and it sounds like such a small thing, but that is so true. Anybody that has been on the trail hears that and they're like, oh yes, I know exactly what you mean. It means something when you find a good rock on the trail. Can you talk about some other stuff that maybe comes to mind?
Yeah. So, my goodness, John, there are so many things that we talk about, you know, whether it's, you know, I mean, some things that would seemingly be the simplest of, you know, of things, but, you know, how do you whittle? Or, you know, the proper way of using an axe or a hatchet. You know, in those days, we actually still carried a hatchet. We carried a saw, but we also carried a hatchet as well. Since, you know, more modern technology nowadays, on our trips nowadays, we typically won't even take a hatchet or a small little forest axe. We pretty much try to do everything with a saw. But, you know, just really simple things like that, you know, in those days, you know, not touching the interior of the tent, you know, it's raining out. And, you know, I think your curiosity wants you to always, you know, kind of fiddle around with things and, you know, and there's some things that are just better left undone, you know, whether it be standing up in a canoe while you're fishing. You know, there's just so many little things that are just cardinal rules that you just don't do, but they're maybe not seemingly totally obvious things that take someone, you know, explaining to you, you know, not running on a portage, you know, the proper way to carry a pack, you know, how do you get a tump line cinched up nice and tight, or how do you get a sternum strap cinched up really tight? You know, well, you know, over time you learn, well, you bend over at the waist to 90 degrees and you support all that load of that pack on your back, bending over, and it creates all this slack on the sternum strap. And then it makes it really easy to cinch it up. If you try and do it just simply standing up, it just doesn't work. You just have to bend over to do it. I guess I don't know that I have other small things that immediately come to mind. However, I think a lot of it came from a lot of my experiences came from Camp Voyager, and then they continued. The learning continued after Camp Voyager. For many years, we did not outfit ourselves in the trips after the Camp Voyager days. We actually used an outfitter in Ely, outside of Ely, that no longer is around. It was a company called Tom and Woods, and got to be relatively close with both Tom Ware and Woods Davis, who ran that operation up on Moose Lake. And, you know, in all of the things that we learned from them over the years, you know, how's the right way to actually organize food, and organizing it by, you know, different bags, all based upon, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so you're not literally having to empty a food pack at every meal, and planning out meals based upon travel days or layover days. I think camp, a lot of times it seems like it, you know, it plants the seeds. Maybe you don't learn everything. Well, you surely don't learn everything about wilderness canoe tripping at Camp Voyager, because I have found it's an ongoing process that I don't think you ever are done with. But it plants the seeds enough, and it gives you enough experience to really provide that jumping off point then, to really foster that lifelong learning then of wilderness canoe tripping and doing it right, as well as the working with others. There's this really team concept that Camp Voyager really fosters as well. That again, it's a pretty difficult thing, I think, to explain, but you grow up, I think young campers, they grow up a lot in their days of Camp Voyager, I think partially because it's not easy. However, it's really substantial learning. And I think the better you get at it, the better you make those challenging times. The good times, I think, are always good. But, you know, I've often said that the park always has a way of conspiring against you. I don't know if that's necessarily a thing that everybody would agree with, but that's always what I've kind of found. But as you get more and more experienced in the ways of wilderness canoe tripping, you make those challenging times better, safer, but you also make them just more easily endured, that ultimately yield the good times as being that much better as well.
Yeah, that's really well said. I mean, it's definitely hard work. You're dealing with nature, you're dealing with weather. All aspects of the trail can be unpredictable and temperamental, and you can do your best to kind of predict what it's going to be like, but you know that there are going to be curveballs in there. And I think a lot of times, like you said, that's kind of where the learning happens. It doesn't even seem like learning at the time, because a lot of times what you're doing is you're just kind of realizing how to do things better, or how to do things more efficiently, or you're realizing why it's better to paddle this way versus that way, why it's better to sleep in the tent this way versus that way. There's a reason and a purpose behind all of these little bits of wisdom that come along when you're on a trip. And
there is,
in my experience, you don't even realize how much you have learned on the trail until you take somebody out on a trip who has never done any of it. And then you realize just how much of a blank canvas their mind is to all of this, because they've never experienced it. And that's where you can conjure up all these little things that you've picked up along the way. It's kind of fun, because when you sit here and try to explain all the different things that you learned, of course, some of them come to mind, but there are hundreds of others. And yet when you sit down to talk to somebody and, okay, this is how we do it, this is how you should do it, those little things keep popping up, and a lot of those came from camp, and a lot of things, to your point, didn't come from camp, but maybe camp kind of planted the seed and you learned other things along the way. So
right,
your point is, whether
it's even just, you know, how you hang a food pack. You know, I've been with, you know, it's funny. The rope and pulley system, as I'm sure you can attest, and as others can attest, you know, the rope and pulley system in hanging a food pack, that can be a bit challenging from time to time, depending upon what the landscape looks like at a specific site. And sometimes it can be really easy, and sometimes it can be a real challenge. And I've in my days since Camp Voyager, actually in more recent days, you know, I've taken other people into the park that have been world-class experienced outdoors persons, really close friends of mine from the Bozeman, Montana area, that, you know, the Beartooth Range and, you know, very, very experienced hikers that will go out on week-long trips hiking like the Beartooth Ridge out in Montana and Wyoming. And, you know, we get into the boundary waters and we start hanging a food pack, and all of a sudden I've got a couple ropes in the trees, and I've got a food pack that's every bit of, you know, we'll say 12, 14 feet off the ground, every bit of probably 8, 9, 10 foot outboard from any adjoining vertical tree. And, you know, and that might get done in 5 or 10 minutes time, where, you know, we'll have other experienced people that, you know, they'll be mucking around with that process for an hour and ultimately wanting to try and half climb, you know, a section of tree to try to get their ropes in the right place. And, well, how are you doing that? Well, you know, you're tying a rock on this rope or whatnot. So there's things that you just learn. You just learn by seeing other people do it and then struggling with the process and doing it yourself. And, you know, how do you, really simple things, like you were saying, like we were saying before, the things you pick up, like how do you collect water? You know, I think one of the oldest things I can remember always thinking is, you know, oh, you collect your water in a fast moving, nice, crystal clear stream in the boundary waters. And as you know, and as others know, you know, well, that's the last thing you do. You know, if you're not going to filter, and I'm not advocating not filtering or not boiling or anything like that, but I will say at this point, I probably have a combined 300 plus nights in the boundary waters or the Quetico. In the early days after Camp Voyager, it was Quetico. We spent quite a bit of time up around Sarah Lake and in those areas. And then we started spending most all of our time in the boundary waters. And, you know, I think in all of our trips, I think I've actually filtered water probably one or two trips of those 300 nights. We paddle out, you know, 50 feet, 100 foot from shore. We kind of very delicately brush off the surface of the water. You know, and then we take our big Nalgene and you flip it upside down and you kind of submerge it, you know, and then you rotate the bottle up, you know, a foot under the water, and then you collect and then you cap it and then you bring it out and then you just drink it straight like that. And we've never once been sick. But prior to actually having that demonstrated with me by others, I would have never known that. I would live by filtering and in for the constant fear of Giardia. And but again, you know, there's things you come up with and then that's what you do, and it sticks with you.
And there's certainly a right and a wrong way to teach somebody something, to effectively communicate the proper way to do something. And we're talking here how we learned these things undoubtedly because we had great people teaching these things to us on the trail. And I think that that's been one of the strengths of Camp Voyager through the years, is that the staff has been some really great staff and some really effective educators on staff at Camp Voyager. Do you remember at your time at camp, the staff, was it a staff that was heavy with people that were either teachers or getting their degree in teaching? Or do you remember anybody that was, it was a counselor up
at that time?
I don't remember any specific counselors by name, but I will say, you know, the counselors that we had in those days, they primarily fell into two different categories. They were, you know, the very athletic, very skilled athleticism type individuals. And then we had those that were really well taught and well experienced in the ways of the park. I will say those staff, probably one of my fondest, probably the single fondest memory that I've got of camp, in that I was blessed in my time at camp in that we still had Charlie around. And I know you've probably heard countless stories, but Charlie was a pretty special guy. You know, as much grief as we probably gave him at the time, you know, because I came from that era where, you know, we would meet at the fire pit, and maybe once a week we would have in those days what we would call Charlie's cheapies, you know, which was like bologna sandwiches standing around the fire pit telling stories. And I remember Charlie would get so perturbed and so upset with us. But I still, to this day, I remember, though, his emphatic smile in that, you know, you would come back from a trip and you would literally look like something the cat drug in. And he would come up to you and he would put his arm around you. And he was always kind of a heavy set guy, you know, and he would be, well, you know, how was your trip? Did you see anything exciting? Did you see any wildlife? Did you tell any good stories? And, you know, did you catch any fish? And he was just a really cool guy. And I can't imagine thinking that camp doesn't still have that type of mindset. I don't know that you ever necessarily replace a Charlie, but I'm sure you still have those same types that are there that are really that foundational building block for the young kids. But it was special people. You know, I think that was one of the big things that made Camp Voyager so special for me. You know, and it was different too in that, John, it wasn't, you know, campers and then counselors. You know, the counselors, I do remember, they were also the campers. We wanted to learn from them. We wanted to be like them. But they were one of us, and that built a level of camaraderie that was, it wasn't like we had a bunch of camp counselors and then we had a bunch of campers. It was different than that. We were all one together.
I think a big part of that as well kind of goes back to what we were talking at the very beginning about going to camp, not for it's not an overnight camp in the sense of you stay for one night and then you go back home. You're staying there for a whole session, or in some cases, 6 weeks. Nowadays, sometimes the sessions go into 8 weeks. It's almost impossible to be in that sort of situation and not create this sense of togetherness between the campers and the staff, this familial feeling to kind of tear down the barrier of those are the campers and these are the staff. And I'm not to say that the barrier's not there when it has to be for disciplinary reasons or whatever, but sure. I think that there is something to be said for having those two groups, the campers and the counselors, living together, eating together, taking trips together for such an extended period of time. I think that really helps grow that communal feel.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely correct. It was very evident that we all really wanted to be there. You know, it wasn't as if we were there because our parents were doing something else and, you know, we couldn't be with them for whatever reason, whether they were taking some special vacation or whatever it may have been. You know, it was genuinely a deal where we really wanted to be there. And I think that just created this more harmonious atmosphere. It was much more so an issue when camp would start coming to a close, because we didn't want to go back. We didn't want to go back to school. You know, it was, you know, gee, we just wish that, you know, camp could be 10 weeks long or 12 weeks long instead of the 6 weeks. It's just not long enough. We always long for taking that little bit longer trip out in the park. And, you know, I still look back on my years at camp, and I really wish that I could have gone to camp more. I wish I would have started at Camp Voyager earlier than I did, in that I started a little bit later in life. And then, pretty quickly after my last year at camp, then I became of driving age, you know, and then other priorities started kind of kicking in, and I wasn't able to make it back. But it's, you know, I still look back on it today, as I've told my family, it's arguably some of my fondest memories I have growing up, were those 2 short years that I had at camp. You know, that has fostered my love of the park ever since. And that has become an enduring passion of mine my entire life. After my camp days, got married to a high school sweetheart. And after being married, we immediately began taking all of our vacations, staying at typically either Pine Point or Silver Rapids, and, you know, endlessly fishing that farm, White Iron and Garden chain of lakes. And, you know, I could draw to this day a topographic map of the river mouth way out on White Iron, and the hook that's in the back of that bay where I've picked up who knows how many big smallmouth. And you know, and then once our girls came along, the trips have continued with them. And as recently as, you know, last year, I was in the Boundary Waters for a week with my youngest daughter, who's now an environmental scientist living in downtown Chicago, and she's 24. I've been blessed in my life to have lots of friends in pretty special places. In my youngest daughter, Maddie, she attended a military academy in Castine, Maine, called the Maine Maritime Academy. And she attended the Corning School of Ocean Sciences there in Castine, Maine, which is just an unbelievably beautiful place. You know, it's a half hour from Acadia, and spent time everywhere, spent a lot of time out in Montana and Wyoming and the Canadian Rockies and, you know, and everywhere. But there's no place quite like the Boundary Waters. There's just no place quite like Ely. And to this day, I drive into Ely and I pull into Ely. And of course, you reminisce a little bit about the things that used to be there in my days. You know, in camp, you had the Canadian Waters and Wilderness Outfitters and all the different, you know, outfitters and Pizza Hut. And way back in the day, there was, you know, we had an A&W in Ely, and a lot of those things obviously are gone now. And we still talk and miss going into Pizza Hut, immediately coming out of the park and sitting in there before you'd even taken a shower. But it still feels like home. You still roll into Ely and you still see the tower, the water tower, and you feel like you're home.
Thanks for tuning in to today's conversation with Dale Reckman. Sincere thanks also to Dale himself for being on the podcast. If you want to support the show, well, if there's any sort of like button on whatever platform you're using to listen to this episode, it helps if you click that, or you can leave a comment saying that you like the podcast, or you can share it with a friend or a fellow camp alum, or you can head over and browse the Camp Voyager website or browse the Camp Voyager online store. But most of all, just come back again, because we'll be back with another episode very soon. We'll see you then.